Disclaimer, if you are a parent and you generally listen to the Wednesday conversation with kids in the room, we are going to talk in this podcast about some things that relate to human sexuality and that are somewhat sensitive. And so this might be more of an earbud podcast than a in the minivan or in the living room kind of a podcast. So just want to give you a heads up on that.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Coramdale Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church in Bellevue, Nebraska. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about contraception. I mean,
it does feel that way.
Sometimes.
Lately.
Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, believe it or not, we're talking about contraception.
Still. And Jen is with us again.
I'm back.
Our friend Jen Newman. Hey, we want to tackle some reproductive technology questions that we've received. There's actually two things we want to do. We want to tackle a couple questions and tackle a really important cultural topic that came up in the past few weeks that connects pretty intimately to this conversation. So someone wrote and asked, hey, would you talk about which reproductive technologies are okay? So this listener is basically saying, you guys are talking about reproductive technology, but you haven't told me which ones can I do and which ones can't I? You're right. We haven't, because we just want to have a conversation.
We want to be mysterious.
We don't want it to be the Wednesday prescription. But I do think there's a basic piece of wisdom here that can guide our thinking on reproductive technology, and it is this. Anything that furthers... Or extends, is that the word
assists.
I'm looking for? Thank you, Chris. Anything that assists the natural reproductive act of a husband and wife in a way that works with their bodies, I think is allowable. Anything that seeks to replace the embodied nature of conception, I think is problematic. So I would have a problem with surrogacy. I would have a problem with in vitro fertilization. I think both of those need to be out of bounds for convictional Christians. I think a lot of other things, hormone supplements, medication, maybe even artificial insemination, depending on how it's done. I think those are within the realm of moral possibility for Christians. Jen, off mic, you were telling us a story I never knew until just now.
Yeah, we were talking about artificial insemination, and I said, that's how I was conceived, which is true. My dad had testicular cancer at a young age and made the decision to make us a sperm bank donation when he was young, because he didn't know when he would get married, if he'd get married, but he knew he wanted to have kids someday. And so when my parents met and got married, they decided to start trying for children that way. So the joke is, I was conceived while my dad was at a football game. Not even at the doctor's office.
Well, then.
So, but that's a good example of a particular health aspect of brokenness in the fall, right? That prevents my ability to conceive a child. And so I take some sperm, set it aside, and then use medical means later to with my wife conceive a child, but not in the natural way, you might say. And I think, but in the context of a husband-wife relationship and a mutual decision, that seems to me to be morally permissible, even though, you know, it doesn't involve the sexual act. That's where I think the Catholics would maybe have a little stricter view here, huh, Chris?
I think, yeah.
I don't want to make you speak for the Roman Catholic Church,
you
necessarily.
Know, being
the
official representative.
Being Roman Catholic.
I've talked to a Catholic priest once. I mean, so let me ask this hypothetical situation with in vitro. What if all of the eggs are implanted? And so you basically, mom's like saying, I'll have 8 kids if needed, but all of them are, they're seeking life in all of them. Because this is where it gets a little fuzzy for me, because isn't the purpose of, or the problem with a lot of in vitro is, hey, you implant a few eggs and you have all these others.
Yes.
That just get stored.
I think that's the ethical problem. Yes.
And so what if someone is willing to say, I'll roll the dice and take all however many.
Yeah.
And if I have 8 kids at once, then so be it.
I want to suggest, at the very least, there's the ethical question. I want to suggest for Christians, there's also an embodiment question. Okay, meaning, to go back to your example, Jen, we're still allowing life to grow and take root within the womb, In IVF, we're bypassing the womb and trying to get an embryo started in a test tube in a laboratory and then put it into the womb. And in my mind, at some point, that starts to step outside the body and essentially just let science do what God intended for the body to do and to be done in the womb.
Yeah, my mom still had to track her cycles, know when she had ovulated.
Yeah.
They were giving her drugs so that, I mean, she would ovulate a few eggs at a time. And she had made the decision, if these all get fertilized and implanted, then I will have triplets or twins. Yeah. But yeah, her body still had to do that work.
Yeah. So I feel like as a Christian, we have to ask the question of embodiment. And that would be an important one, I think.
And that's where the Catholic Church, their position really has a strong view of embodiment, which is the restrictions you're going to see are because of their theology of that. Yes. And I think it's important for Protestants to understand that even if you disagree, understanding where the Catholic Church is coming from is that it's not just the ethics of reproductive technology, it's also this embodiment theology that they highly value.
Right. And I think we should highly value as well. So I think anything that sort of seeks to come alongside the body and heal its brokenness and work with it to allow conception, I would say would be okay. Dusty, you have a different thought there?
No.
You're looking at me very pensively.
No.
Off mic, Dusty says, no, everything's cool.
I think it's maybe. I think what's helpful here is there's a slippery slope between begetting children and making children, to use Alistair Roberts' language in an article that I recently read. So, and I think, you know, if we can make them, then we want to. And so I think that's, we've said this before on this same series of podcasts, there needs to be a pause there.
Yeah. And that's actually the article that I wanted us to engage today in light of this question. Alistair Roberts wrote a piece on the Gospel Coalition. It's been 2 or 3 weeks ago now. What's the title of the piece, Mike?
Sex Scandal, The Drive to Abolish Male and Female and Childbearing.
Okay, so this comes out of a report you might have recently seen in the news where a lamb was successfully gestated in an artificial womb. The photo's kind of creepy. It looks like a Ziploc bag with a tube flown into it, and it's like this lamb fetus in there. And it's an experiment that was carried out, and basically Alistair Roberts is reflecting on that experiment and asking, what do Christians need to start thinking about now based on what this technology might make possible? So he wants to say, I'm not saying this is going to happen. I'm not prognosticating about the future, but I am saying a technology like this starts to make certain things possible that we start to need to think about. And he's suggesting what it makes possible is the possibility that in the future, children could be nurtured outside the human body. So you could have an artificial womb and have a baby, let's say a baby, for instance, that's at 22 or 23 weeks, that's perhaps not yet viable outside the womb, or is going to be a real touch and go situation medically. You could take that child, if the mother's in danger, put it in an artificial womb, allow it to continue to gestate and grow to health. And Alistair Roberts is suggesting this technology would probably first be used in that sort of a way. But he's also suggesting if you combine this technology with some of the logic of radical feminism, what it starts to open up is, could we see a future where a woman's body is no longer necessary in order to conceive a child? You have an artificial womb, you have artificial insemination. As long as you have an egg donor and a sperm donor, you can essentially bake a child in this artificial womb and then create life. Now he's saying, look, I'm not saying that's going to happen. But I'm saying an experiment like this starts to make that way more conceivable than it ever has been. And so it really starts to press the questions of embodiment, of how central is the body to a Christian view of humanity. And the point of view that he wants us to think about, and that's actually out there, and this is one of those, just like we talked about intersectionality and like, hey, this might be on a college campus and maybe it's not in your neighborhood, but it's going to be. The point of view he wants us to wrestle with is a point of view called transhumanism, which actually is a philosophical point of view, and it comes out of feminism, and it's basically saying what we're aiming for is the day when we're no longer defined by our human limitations, and we've sort of transcended our humanity. And there is a strain of radical feminism, and by the way, I realize not every feminist is a radical feminist, but the most radical feminism sees the womb as the last impediment for women, as like the thing that keeps them from being able to do everything a man can do and have no risk of children, right, or pregnancy, sort of putting them in a different category. And so there are some radical feminists who would say, in order for women to achieve what we want to see them achieve in society, we need to finally be done with the womb. Now, I hope that most women listening to this podcast would say that's offensive, but you need to know that's out there.
Yeah. It's interesting that even to hear you say that, even after I've read that, just sounds terrible.
Yeah.
But you can see how this is getting championed.
Yeah.
I think one of the ways he puts it in this article is he says the intense physical bond between mother and infant is one of the most stubborn obstacles to an egalitarian and individualistic society, which is exactly what we're in now and yeah. being championed.
And by the way, the book he's quoting here is from 1970, written by Shulamith Firestone, who's a feminist author. So he's saying, look, this lady was writing in 1970 and envisioning a day when technology could take the role of childbearing away from women so they could finally achieve their full potential. And so he's saying, look, that might still be a fringe viewpoint, but you need to realize that it's out there and that this artificial womb experiment starts to put this in stark relief and forces Christians to ask the question, yeah, at what point, where do we draw boundaries and lines when it comes to technology being able to assist reproduction in ways that no longer require even a human body?
So let's, as a thought experiment, I'm a Christian and this technology has developed to where now it allows and assists in reproduction. And me and my wife are saying, we are not radical feminists. We're not trying to detach her from responsibility. We don't see that her womb is tyranny and holding her back from her potential, but we just want a kid. So our entering into this technology comes from a very different point.
Yep.
But is there a sense where I am aiding sort of the cultural winds to push that direction, or can I enter into it in a very different way, regardless of what other people do? So I guess what I'm asking in some ways is Christians are going to say, well, that's not us. We're not the radical feminists. Right. We're not trying to divorce. We just want a kid.
Right.
And as much as possible, we want to, you know, we want to raise that kid to know the Lord. We want to engage in the right way. There's just this technology that offers us getting the kid on this into this world.
Doesn't it? It seems like your question takes us back to the thing you were talking about a few podcasts ago of does the chance to alleviate my suffering mm-hmm. and the fact that I can mean yes. that I should?
Yes. Yes.
I was reading an article that was, I think, quoted in this one, or I saw tied on Facebook from NPR. This is from a sociologist. Her name's Barbara Rothman. She says the problem is a baby raised in a machine is denied a human connection. And to her, that's a scary and tragic thing. So I think Christians need to think about that, too, is the bond that a baby has with a mother before the baby's even born is an important bond. And so what are these children even going to be like raised in a bag on a wall, like they said?
Mm. Yeah, that's scary. But it's like, it feels sort of like a sci-fi movie.
Like
right?
The Matrix.
Yeah. But it's interesting that all of our cultural, and when I say our, I mean in the broadest sense, all of the culture's sort of radical understanding of gender is pushing in this direction.
Totally.
Right, it's pushing in, let's eliminate the difference between male and female, and let's just sort of have a monogendered society where if you want to have a kid, great. If you want to grow your kid in a bag, great. If you want to have no kids, great. If you want to mm-hmm. have a sexual relationship with someone of the same sex, opposite sex, whatever, great. Like, the more that sexuality becomes disconnected from procreation, right? That's where this sort of takes us, is to where now I can even conceive a child without needing to have a male body and a female body coming together and a womb in which to grow that baby. And so it really does start to move us in a strange and dangerous direction technologically. And I guess, Chris, you're asking the right question, which is, okay, does a Christian who doesn't embrace all of that, do they still have freedom to use the technology if it's available?
Well, another way to ask it is, does that make me complicit in these cultural moves? That do Christians have to, at some point, have to come to grips with the fact that, yeah, we may be engaging this in a little different way, but we cannot avoid that when we do it, we are complicit in some way of allowing this to grow within our culture. And that seems like a really hard thing to say, but in some ways, I think we need to take a step back and say, if we are furthering this technology in this way, and the culture takes it and runs with it, and we didn't do anything to sort of hit the brakes, are we not complicit?
Yes. I would say, yes, we are. And to that point, here's the hard choice that Christian parents are going to have to face. Am I willing to receive, bear the cross of infertility, even if, hypothetically, I could avoid that through the use of some sort of technology, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, even if I can't bear a child, but even if I could go make
right,
one.
Right, exactly. And that's a tough existential mm-hmm. and ethical place to be. But I think these are the kinds of questions that Christians need to do a better job of asking. Because to your point, the way you phrased the question a few minutes ago, we're used to thinking in terms of motive and say, well, look, if my motive is like, mm-hmm. You know, I'm just out for myself, that's different. But if my motive is, well, I want a child and that's a good thing, and the Lord says, right, that's a good thing. And so I'm not a radical feminist and I don't want to further, you know, this some strange cultural phenomenon. I just want to use this technology toward the end of something that's good. We tend to put so much focus on motive mm-hmm. that we don't ask the question of just, yeah, but the activity itself. And this is where I have a lot of respect for the Catholics, is they just say, if it goes outside the human body, then no. Like, there just needs mm-hmm. to be things we say, nope, no IVF, no surrogacy, no artificial womb, just no. Not because we couldn't, but because we shouldn't.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
So the thing that's bouncing around in my head as we talk about all these things, is this. So for the last 40, 50 years, since the beginning of the sexual revolution, we've gradually seen the dehumanizing of people. So whether it be, hey, let's have all the sex we want, without the bounds of marriage. And so, we see the rise in divorce. We see, the rise in homosexual activity and being accepted by society. And radical feminism saying that, hey, let's flatten all gender, let's flatten all these distinctions and make us all the same. It's this de-imaging of God in a way. And we have to realize that all that's happening, not by people, but there's a force, there's powers behind all that. Ephesians 6 says that we're not fighting against flesh and blood, we're fighting against spiritual principalities. We're fighting against the devil. And what Revelation shows us is that we're, as Christians, we're fighting against the empire. And so when we're having these conversations about, is it okay to have a baby grow in an artificial womb? We have to realize that if that truly is a dehumanizing of male and female and flattening those distinctions, are we really fighting against technology? Or are we fighting against the empire, the beast, if you will.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. There, to go along with that, there's some political theologians who would say that in the modern world, empire, what was sort of Rome and even like the British Empire, you know, what used to be political mm-hmm. is now economic. Mm. So the empire is now essentially the multinational corporation. Mm. And the push of consumerism and capitalism. And so if you just lay that grid over it and say, right, a lot of what's driving all of this is the desire to monetize technological advances and sin.
Yeah.
Just like, let's make money off people's vices, off their greed, off mm-hmm. their longings. Mm-hmm. This is very much about sort of resisting the empire.
Mm-hmm. And there's a sense of when, as Christians, we accept these things, we're, like you were saying, Chris, we're kind of like involved in all of that. Like we partake in that. And I think we have to be thoughtful about the decisions we make and say, am I bowing the knee to the Almighty God, creator of heaven and earth, or am I bowing my knee and succumbing to the empire, to the consumerism, to just my desires?
And if you look at the biblical narrative, what is repeatedly one of the areas where Satan most comes at temptation, whether it be culturally or individually, through our suffering? Like, there's something lacking, there's something I want, there's some way to alleviate my pain.
Make these stones become bread.
Yeah, yeah. It's the Lord's withholding this tree from you. That there's going to be this stopping to think, like, in the midst of our suffering, like acknowledging, yes, this hurts, but are there voices speaking into that, alleviate suffering this way and this way and this way? And so it's very deceptive, like you said, and very satanic underneath a lot of these cultural winds, but that voice is going to be very subtle when it speaks to Christians about how we alleviate suffering.
Here's the other fascinating thing. This goes back to Brian Hodges' book from last week. He says, you know, one of the things he's pushing back is our naturalistic presuppositions. It basically says we want to be in control and we believe science and technology gives us the capacity to sort of make things happen. And he just wants to push us to say, hey, in the Bible, God always opens and closes the womb. So is it possible that if we prayed, sought the Lord, sought the prayers of the community around us, is it possible that we might be able to conceive a child without pursuing radical technological innovations? Now, again, I don't want to pit common grace against special grace or to say that providentially God hasn't made certain things possible through technology, but man, Hodge really wants to press us to say, are we buying into the very culture that we're in that says you can control your destiny? If you're not pursuing every available means, then you're stupid, you know, versus, well, what if I choose not to pursue some means just because I have convictions about it? And I say, I actually believe the Lord can heal and that the Lord creates life. And that if I'm struggling with this, I want to keep just seeking the Lord and saying, God, would you enable this? Because, right, if we believe the Bible, we believe Sarah, right? You deal with people like Sarah and people like Rachel, like people who their wombs were closed and God opened them. And I don't want to over spiritualize and be like, so just keep praying. I realize this is a painful reality for people that are walking in it right now. But I just wonder if there's an opportunity for us to be countercultural, even in how we expect these problems to get solved under the sovereignty of God.
And in addition to that, If I'm coming from my motives, which are, man, I want to raise godly kids, and so I want to make them and have them, we're not at all even asking the questions of what else would the Lord want me to do? If he's not giving me children, if he's not giving us children. Sometimes I see couples skipping all of that conversation and being less reflective as I'd like them to be and just saying, man, what does this mean for us then? If we haven't been able to have children, what does God want us to do? Because it's obviously something different, you know? And so I think that's just, we have to think about, I realize that that's plan A, but what else would the Lord have for you?
So I'm going to close with a compelling article that I want to put before you or suggest to our listeners. You're going to have to go search for it on Google. Karen Swallow Pryor, about 2 months ago, wrote an article. I don't remember where it was posted. It might have been at the Gospel Coalition. Where she talked about being called to childlessness, which is the one thing I feel like young women struggling with infertility do not want to talk about. Karen Swallow Pryor is a woman, I think she's in her 50s. She has not had children. She's married. And she narrates her story and says, we tried to have kids. We pursued as many fertility options as we thought we could in good conscience. The Lord didn't give us kids. As we continue to pray and seek him, I think that I'm called to childless. And she basically says, here's my ministry for the last 25 years. Here's the things God has graced me to do. And I really think this is his grace in my life, calling me to do these things instead of what I thought my script would be, which would be to be a mom. And she's saying this in a very compassionate way, but she's saying, women, we need to process this question of, might that, just like God calls people to singleness, does God call married women to childlessness? In her case, she believes yes. And so I want to commend that article, not as a fix-all and not as a, you know, just read this and sort of it'll answer the questions for you, but as a question that as we've talked about reproductive technology and tried to say, are there some limits here that Scripture calls us to, that's one of the questions that probably needs to get asked more frequently and more convictionally within our church and within our listenership, is just to say, you know, do we ask that question, and what would it suggest if we did? And so again, Karen, as a very thoughtful woman, has much to say, and I think you'll find that article helpful in really good ways.
I think with that question, Bob, then the church probably needs to work on becoming a safer, more comfortable place.
Preach
to be
that.
Married and not have kids.
Preach on that.
Rather than feeling like I'm inferior or there's no place for me in community.
It's all about family.
Yeah. I've been married for 8, 10, 12 years, whatever. So the question is, well, do they want to have kids? And that becomes really awkward. Like,
why aren't you guys having kids yet?
Or when do you want to have kids?
Jen, that's a great call to us and a great invitation, I think, to listeners. Because I think where that starts is just our awareness of how a question like that, Mike, feels to someone, right? Just like, oh, I'm gonna learn not to ask that question. I'm going to learn to engage that in a different way. So absolutely, especially in a churches like ours where there's a lot of young families, I realize it can feel like a pretty lonely place for people who are wishing to have kids and don't yet. And
yeah,
so
you would never ask a single person in their 30s, well, do you want to be married? Like, yeah.
Yeah.
But that it becomes alienating and isolating.
Yeah.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that the things that we've talked about might also be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to the articles that were mentioned in this podcast. And if you have questions or thoughts,
if you want us to do a part 7 or a part 8,
Shoot us an email, podcast@cdomaha.com. Be sure to go to iTunes to give us a nice review, 4 or 5 stars, and say nice things about us so that other people can find these podcasts.
Oh my gosh, Mike, stop.
Is there a place on iTunes where I can go like, I love Mike Kresnik? Is that what you're...
Yeah.
Because I've honestly never done that.
Yeah, you should.
I will.
Go on there right now.
I will. Okay.
And I hope that you join me, Mike Kresnik, and my fellow podcast friends for another Wednesday conversation.